I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. I'm here today with Roger Grimes, Data-Driven Defense Evangelist for KnowBefore, the world's first and largest new school security awareness training and simulated phishing platform that helps you manage the ongoing problem of social engineering. To learn more about KnowBefore, visit knowbefore.com. Roger, welcome. It's so great to have you back with us today.
I'm always glad to be back.
So, Roger, when this episode airs, the 2021 Summer Olympics will be in full swing, kind of finishing up, which is really exciting since they were delayed due to COVID last year. And before we get into what's at risk with cyber attacks during this year's Olympic Games, I'm wondering if you just give a quick background of some of the cyber criminal activity that happens during events as large as the Olympics.
Yeah, you know, any Olympics invites things these days. Some of the biggest, most impactful, most aggressive nation state attacks have taken place during Olympics. You know, so that certainly there have been books written about previous nation state attacks, you know, that targeted the Olympics and things around the Olympics. And certainly, you know, the Olympics, just like almost any other noteworthy event, will be used in phishing attacks for sure. You know, like, you know, they'll say things like, oh, the Tokyo Olympics, you know, were canceled, or, you know, so-and-so won, or can you believe that this team beat that team, right? And these are topics that are guaranteed to create interest. You know, what you're trying to do as a fisher, as a social engineer, is generate this emotional, visceral response. And the Olympics is full of that, you know, testosterone and citizens being proud of their country and sport. You know, sports certainly is some of the biggest motivators around. So Olympics are not only like a nation state, you know, honey trap. And these days, anybody that's trying to protect the cyber systems of the Olympics really has to understand that they are absolutely going to be attacked by multiple nation states. But then the topic itself is going to be used to try to compromise the rest of the world. So it's a pretty big deal overall.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned in your response, you know, social engineering. And I know that you just put out an article on LinkedIn, the top 10 things you can do to fight malicious hackers and malware. And I think that you cover off on social engineering pretty heavily there. So I'd like to hear you weigh in on social engineering, because it is such a large part of phishing, but then also other many different types of cyber attacks.
You know, yeah, I actually wrote that article a little bit in the rant because I've been asked, hey, write the top 20 things you can do to prevent, you know, hackers and malware. And I'm like, listen, it's really three things. And it has only been three things, or the vast majority of all hacking and malware comes down to three events. Three types of root causes of hacking, and that social engineering and phishing have been the number one way since the computers have been invented. Social engineering and phishing probably accounts for somewhere between 40 and 90% of all successful malicious cyber attacks. I mean, really huge. Unpatched software is involved in somewhere around 20 to 40%, depending on the survey. And then everything else added up altogether is maybe 10% of those attacks. And let me say, and it's been that way for three decades. I mean, so it's kind of frustrating that people are like, well, you know, hey, you know, what do I need to do to avoid hackers? And pretty much, I mean, really quickly, succinctly, don't be socially engineered, whatever it takes not to be socially engineered, and patch your software. Those are the two biggest risks by far. And if you don't handle those two things well, none of the other stuff is going to help you. And what's the reason why I went on the rant is that, you know, it's been that way for three decades, or I've been in the cybersecurity career for 34 years, and it's still document after document comes out. Hundreds of pages of documents will come out and either not cover fighting social engineering mitigation documents. Like, I just read a NIST, Here's How You Fight Ransomware, the other day.
Yeah.
And it was out of the eight things they told you to do to fight ransomware, fighting social engineering was the eighth one out of the eight, and really was poorly treated. But, you know, I'll go into things like the NIST Cybersecurity Framework, PCI DSS, which covers credit card stuff, HIPAA, Sarbanes-Oxley, GDPR, you name it.
Right.
I can pull up a 100, 200-page guide, this regulation that you have to follow, And their treatment of social engineering is either to ignore it or almost ignore it. And then, like, you know, like, so I was looking at the latest PCI DSS, right? Yep. How you protect credit cards in America and wherever else, I guess, covered by Visa, MasterCard.
Yep.
And, you know, it's like 80 pages long. They spend, I'm not making this up, like 20 pages on how to make sure you have your firewall configured and managed correctly. Thousands of lines. Well, if not thousands, many hundreds of lines of text and literally dozens of individual recommended controls of how you configure your firewall. And pretty much firewalls don't work. I mean, if you even look, the last executive order from President Biden said, hey, we're going to go on zero trust. And zero trust is a defense that says firewalls really don't work and haven't worked for decades. And so we're going to kind of not focus on firewalls. Yet PCI DSS has, you know, 20 pages, hundreds to thousands of lines telling you how to configure your firewall. And if they had two sentences on fighting social engineering, I'd be shocked. And it's not just PCI DSS, it's HIPAA, it's Sarbanes-Oxley, it's the NIST cybersecurity framework, or literally, I'm amazed, even when I talk to people, like I'll talk to the nation's cybersecurity leaders, I'll talk to cybersecurity defenders and CISOs and CIOs and CEOs, and I'll go, hey, how do you fight, you know, hackers and malware? What's the best way? They never mention fighting social engineering. And it really is, I'm just trying to think if there's some, like, it's the most obvious thing in the world. I reviewed, over the last 3 years, I've reviewed 107 different security reports that talk about this is how you get hacked.
Yeah.
And only one of them out of 107 even didn't say that social engineering is number one. So one of the 107 said social engineering was the second way that you would be hacked. But the other 106 over the last 3 years have said social engineering is the number one way by far. And so it's really very strong consensus. And if you talk to any cybersecurity defense person, you tell them, hey, social engineering is number one, pretty much they all agree. Mm. But yet the average IT security budget probably spends 3 to 5% to fight the number one problem.
Yeah,
and it's like this, it's the fundamental misalignment and disconnect that is allowing this stuff to be so successful. And then all the guides and regulations that we have to follow are just training us to ignore it. It's just, sorry if I'm getting excited, but
no,
it requires a rant.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm with you where my brain is going to this place of like, why? Why is no one, you know, why aren't companies taking this more seriously, or why isn't this top of mind for, you know, NIST and other structures like that? Like, why do you have any, I mean, obviously there isn't like big social engineering. That's not a thing. So it's not like there's like some overlord, but I don't know. Why would that be? Is it just that we're focused on the wrong things because we think that they're easier to plug and play, or what?
Yeah, you know, I thought about it a lot. And I wrote a book kind of on this called Data-Driven Computer Defense a couple of years ago. I consider it kind of my magnum opus. And I actually have a chapter dedicated to how come people aren't focusing on the right things, whatever the right thing may be. And, it was definitely that there is this distraction of all these things. Like, you're being told every day that you need to worry about, you know, 100. Like, last year, there was 18,103 patches that we were told that we had to apply. That's like 55 a day or something like that. It's day after day, year after year. So you're worried about all these patches. And then you're worried about, you know, ransomware and insider attacks. So really there is this, just this concophony. I call it bubbles in a glass of champagne of threats. And a lot of the people selling you, most people trying to sell you defenses are trying to sell you software and hardware and not something that kind of looks at the human. I'm lucky I work at KnowBe4, and I don't work at KnowBe4 by accident. I worked at Microsoft the previous 11 years. And what I realized is that all the advanced super secure operating systems and networks and securing Active Directory and doing smart cards and doing multi-factor authentication, every time I put that into a client, they were still hacked.
Yeah.
Because how are they hacked? By social engineering, usually, or unpatched software. And that's why I went to work for KnowBe4. I'm not talking about this because I'm trying to promote a KnowBe4 product. I'm talking about, I'm at KnowBe4 because I got tired of working at things that didn't work.
Right.
But, you know, so someone the other day said to me, and I think it's really good, is that, you know, you have all these people that are kind of software and hardware driven, and the trying to educate somebody to fight social engineering, it just doesn't fall in a nice, easy basket. But it's also a big part of it's compliance. If you have to do PCI DSS or HIPAA or Sarbanes-Oxley or whatever it is, that compliance, like, or the NIST cybersecurity framework's taking off, it's 100, 200 controls. And fighting social engineering is just one of those controls. But you're not going to be celebrated if you miss any control. You're going to get in trouble if you're not doing all the controls. So you're spending your time on 200 controls, mm-hmm. and no one's telling you that one or two of these controls matter more than all of the rest added together. And I did find one report somewhere last week, I forget where it was, but they actually listed fighting social engineering number one, but almost no report, certainly the regulatory guides, PCI, DSS, and HIPAA, and Sarbanes-Oxley, and GDPR, they never mention it as the first control. They mention routing, or network access protection, or encryption. The whole reason we're not focused on social engineering is that every single thing in our lives, including the mandated, law-required regulations, aren't telling us to focus on it. They're barely mentioning it. It shouldn't be surprising that we're not focusing on it.
Right. That's very interesting. And I saw an article in the Wall Street Journal, maybe this past weekend, or the weekend before, I'm not sure. It all starts to blend together, but it was talking about as a people coming out of COVID, just because we've, you know, been isolated, quarantined, whatever, are already lacking BS detector, for lack of a better term, is at an all-time low. And so that's why things like disinformation are on the rise. But then also that just made me like, when you were hearing you talk about social engineering and how it's the easiest way to hack someone, I just thought of that too, because it's like we're so primed to just naively believe someone or what have you, and it's just like perfect timing for cyber criminals to capitalize on that lack of a BS detector.
Yeah, you know, and certainly part of it is, you know, that's all we've all gone more social, right? Kids aren't riding bicycles as much to visit their friends' houses. We're all social creatures. And that's why attackers like social engineering, because they don't have to worry. If I want to ask for your password, I don't care whether you're on a, you know, Linux, Unix, Windows, Apple, or Chrome notebook, because if you give me your password, I win. And I don't have to write different malware programs for different operating systems. But, you know, yeah, part with the disinformation and stuff, they look at the fishers look at the disinformation topics that are trending, right? Like these days it's COVIDs and vaccines. And, you know, just make, if I'm a fisher, I could make up one, go, I'd make up an email going, governor going to require vaccines, right? Yeah. And that's going to get a certain percentage of the population to click on that link. Or with the, you know, the same thing with the Olympics. In order for you to be successful as a fisher person, sending phishing emails, you have to create this emotional, guttural response. And our social media and the way the disinformation campaigns are going and the tribalism, it is all priming the pumps for social engineering to be even more successful. And let me say, it is, right? Ransomware is out of control, mostly because of social engineering. There are some other factors, unpatched software and some password guessing and that sort of stuff. But, you know, we've never been more primed as a world, as a culture, as a society to be socially engineered. And again, the terrible thing is there isn't a lot of effort that people are being told. If all the guides were right and correctly positioned, fighting and mitigating social engineering using the best combination of policies and technical controls and education would be the first thing you see in every single guideline, in every regulation. And the fact that it isn't explains why it is so bad. It is like somebody is breaking into your house through the windows all the time. Your house is broken into all the time. It's through a window, through a window. And then for some reason you can't really explain, you go out and buy a stronger door. That is what's going on.
It's a great analogy. Well, I guess for anyone listening who may be like, you know what, I need to strengthen my BS detector. I need to be better at spotting social engineering. Is there anything you direct them to as a resource?
Well, I mean, it's going to be self-serving. Anything, yeah, yeah, you know, that Noble 4 writes in their blog, like that's what we do, right? Is try, yeah, to educate people. And that's the key of, if you ever hear the term security awareness training, is just to make you aware of the different BS scams. Like, you know, if a person calls you on the phone and says they're from Microsoft and they detected a virus, if you've not been told that Microsoft will never, ever call anybody ever, ever, well, then you're more likely to be susceptible to a Microsoft technical support phishing scam.
Right.
So the idea is, if you make people aware of the different types of scams out there and the Craigslist scams and all that, as you make people just aware of the scams, they become less likely to be compromised by them. It's, you know, it's why you hold your kid's hand to cross the street, right? At first you're holding their hand, you're saying, hold up, look right, look left, look right. Then you go, and pretty soon the kid knows how to look right and left and go across the street themselves. Same thing with security awareness training. You're just trying to create this culture, this healthy level of skepticism, and to recognize bad things and not reply to them.
Fantastic. Well, Roger, as always, so much fun catching up with you. And I love when you go off on a rant, so you can do that anytime on the show. And really just looking forward to next time.
Me too. Thanks. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you. I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. Joining me today was Roger Grimes, data-driven defense evangelist for KnowBefore, the world's first and largest new school security awareness training and simulated phishing platform that helps you manage the ongoing problem of social engineering. To learn more about our sponsor, KnowBefore, visit knowbefore.com, and you can keep up with all of our media at cybercrimemagazine.com.